This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter the promo code KNOWHOW to save 20% off any order.
Today on Know-How,
your questions, our answers.
It's a Twitch show where we build, bend, break, and upgrade. I am Father Robert Ballasher.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
And for the next however many minutes it takes, we're going to be opening up the cabinet of knowledge that you keep in your head and stocking it like groceries.
Because we've gone to the knowledge store.
Supermarket, really.
Where we canned the knowledge.
And I've got coupons. And then,
you got a lot of coupons.
And actually, knowledge on aisle six.
Knowledge is on discount. You're getting two for one today.
You know, there will be a time when we have stretched that analogy far too far.
I'm always curious to see where the knowledge is going to go. What kind of container are we putting the knowledge in? We've done Ziploc bags.
It's got to be milk jugs. I
mean, milk jugs next?
But not like the resealable ones. The ones with the plastic that you can kind of reseal, but not really. Like if you ever touch them,
right, they're a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
I imagine that if we put them in like the paper milk cartons on the side, it would say missing. You know, it would picture of knowledge. Yeah.
So there you have it, folks. We here at Know-How, we kidnap knowledge, and it ends up on a milk carton.
Cry over spilt knowledge.
We should just end the show right there. No, but we've got a great show for you. We're going to be putting together some of the questions that you've had, some of the project suggestions you had in the Google Plus. And, of course, I've got a review. If you like super fast, and I'm saying seriously, super, super fast network-attached storage, you're going to want to stay tapped because I've got a little something.
How fast?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe
super, super fast?
Something that has an interface that can go 10 times faster than anything you've had.
Precisely, Ryan.
I'm imagining Sonic the Hedgehog right now.
Gotta go fast. But we're going to start first with, actually, this is a fantastic project idea. I kind of repurposed the electronics from a project I already had, but we had a fan of the show who had a very particular suggestion for something we should build. Brian, what is it?
All right, so Mark went into the community and asked us, I am currently a resident in a nursing home and have difficulty with what they have as a call light. When you press the button by your bed, a small LED light comes on above the bed. The problem is I am visually impaired and cannot see if the small LED is on. After waiting a while, I am always having to press the button not knowing whether the light is on or not. I would like some kind of light sensor that could be placed over the small LED and have it buzz or give some kind of audible sound so I know if the button has been pressed. I do have my desktop computer in a few feet away and thought about having some kind of USB device that could have my computer produce a sound. I am enclosing a picture of the wall plate where the LED is located. I have had dreams of since it was hooked up to my computer, I would be able to log of how long light was on each time. It's on. Okay. All right. Thank you in advance, he says. Right.
Okay,
we'll
so
see
take
if we can figure this out.
Take a look at this picture. So this is the plate that he has right now in his room. So the whole idea is that you see where there's like a plug that's connected to a button. So when he pushes that button, it lights up and it calls the nursing station. This is a common feature. We also have it in our retirement home in Los Gatos, which is where I will eventually end up. I mean, I already know where I'm going to die, Ryan. It's going to be there.
It's not too far off. Yeah.
Not too far off. But the thing is, he's got some issues with vision. So he's not sure if the light's actually on. Yeah. So actually, Alex, if you could go back to that picture, what I'm thinking is to use the project that I had already started creating to text people when the done light turned on the washer.
Right.
So the idea is to put a sensor right over that light, and then it would trigger an Arduino. And that Arduino would then be able to either sound a buzzer or, say, activate a shaker, like that you've got in a cell phone, the little vibration thing. Something that gives you a non-visual cue that an action has taken place. In this particular case, he wants to know when the light is activated. He also said, this is that last part where the English wasn't...
I stumbled a little.
You stumbled a bit. But what he wants is he wants to keep a log of how long he's waited every time. Because every time a nurse responds, they hit that little cancel button, the light turns off. So All of this should be automated.
So he wants to keep track of the response time?
He wants to keep a track of the response time. And, you know, I could just tell you about what you have to build, or I could kind of show you. I had a little free time, so I mocked up the electronics. And Alex, if you go to the side view here, this is a demonstration of exactly that. We've got a couple components here that you are familiar with. This is an RTC, and this is a real-time clock, because we're going to want to keep track of the time.
Right.
And the Arduino is not really good on doing it on its own.
No.
This is an Arduino, and this could be any Arduino. I'm using an Uno, but in the final mock-up, I'm going to use a Nano, because I want it to be nice and small, because I want to create a 3D enclosure that will screw onto the plate.
Right, right. The Uno is great for doing the prototyping, and then once you've figured out your wiring, you shrink down to the Nano.
This is the LCD screen, the 2004A. SDA and SCL, so this is the I2C connected device. This will allow me to display the information he wants. So he wants to know when it's been activated, and he wants to know a log. So how long has it taken them to respond in the past?
Right.
There's one piece that's missing that we have not yet used on KnowHow, and that's this thing right here.
What is it?
So this is the light sensor. So this is called a light intensity sensor. This module, actually, right there, this thing I'm touching, that is a photo resistor.
Huh.
So the whole idea is when there is no light, there is no current through this. When there is light, it starts to have more and more current. But the cool thing about this module, because I could just take a photoresistor and figure out a way to wire it in, this module actually allows me to adjust with this little potentiometer how much light will trigger the device.
Ah, that's cool. It's a light button.
It's a light button, right. Nice. So if it detects light, it will allow current through. If not, then it stops.
Right. That's really neat.
Right. And so this actually has a digital, it has both analog and digital output, but I'm using the digital output. Super simple circuit. This connects into the Arduino, into pin number, what is it? Pin number 3. And when it triggers pin 3, so it'll either be low or high.
Right.
And when it triggers, that's when the Arduino knows that the button has been pushed, the light is on. Now, once that has happened,
it should start a timer.
It starts a timer, and it could start a buzzer. I didn't put a buzzer on this because it's an annoying thing. But the other thing I was thinking about doing for him, because I promised him I would build this for him. Instead of a buzzer, there's a little Arduino MP3 player. So I was thinking, well, put like elevator music. You push the button, and it just... Yeah, right?
Yeah. Hey, that'd be awesome.
But let's go ahead and show you how this looks, because I actually did a little bit of the coding. Let's plug this bad mamma jamma in. Okay, so we've got this powered up. And Alex, actually, if you go to the side view here, so the screen has been turned on. I'm going to use this to simulate the light that he would see from the call button, right? So it's got to be bright enough, but as soon as that gets lit up, it's going to start doing a wait time. So it's going to keep a running count of how long it takes for someone to push the cancel button. When they push the cancel button, the light will go off. And now here's the cool thing. What it will do is it will store the different wait times. So the last three wait times, it will just keep on the screen.
Nice.
And the next time you trigger, it will start up the timer again. And when you stop it, it moves it down.
That's cool.
Super simple programming.
I like that.
Super simple circuit. But, you know, this is what I like about Arduinos. There's a lot of utility in this.
Now, if you wanted to output that into, like, a text document or something like that, a way of keeping track of it, because we know that you can save variables to the EEPROM on on the Android, or not Android, Arduino. But if you wanted to, like, put a shield on it so that you could output it to, like, a computer or, like, a...
So you could just keep it connected via USB, because this can communicate with the computer. And you could use... a framework on the computer to interface. I think the much better way to do it, much easier way, and the standalone way to do it is to take like a network shield, something like either the little Ethernet shield that we've been playing with or a Wi-Fi shield, and then have it use a service like Cayenne, which is free, so that every time it triggers, it actually changes a status on an internet server, which you can then log on your computer.
Yeah, okay.
That's probably the way I would do it, rather than connecting it directly to the computer, because then there's issues. If the cable gets detached or if the computer crashes, you lose the log.
Yeah.
This is standalone, but it will work. And remember, it's a trivial matter to, along with starting the timer, say, go ahead and start the vibration motor, or start a buzzer, or start
or
the MP3
start playing
motor.
The Girl from Ipanema.
Yep.
Yeah.
So this is what we're going to do for him. So I'm going to be building this. Again, this is just a mock-up. Mm-hmm. The problem I've been having, Alex, if you go back to that the Google Plus thing, he's got an image there. If you look at
Tiny.
It, I kind of want to make it fit exactly over this Tektone plate.
So you're going to have to get that, a hold of that.
Yeah, and it's not easy. They don't give those out. Because I need that sensor to go right over that light. In fact, there's going to be, I'm going to make it like a little 3D housing that's going to make sure that no extraneous light gets in there.
Right.
Because you actually want the sensitivity to be at the point where it's not going to be falsely triggered.
Yeah. Well, is the sensor on this little shield, is it this red thing?
It's a little round thing, yeah. So that's the photoresistor.
What if you were able to, could you disconnect that and have wires that connect back to the board and basically
absolutely.
Just like a little yeah, extension yeah. for it and then use a sticker
yep.
to hold it on?
And but the thing is, then it's kind of janky.
What
will happen is if it ever falls off, or if it separates enough to develop a light leak, then it just triggers even though the light's not on.
Yeah, good point.
That's, yeah, I don't want that.
That's really cool, though. And I could see using other sensors to keep track of things, because I know my dad back in the day would have loved something like this, where how long was the front door open?
Yeah. You know, like. What I originally designed the circuit for is for the washer-dryer.
Yeah.
I live in a community of guys, and sometimes people will leave their wash in the washer or dryer for days.
Days?
And then they'll say, no, I took it right out. It's like, well, no, I've got a log here. It was in there for 3 days.
And I've also got my nose. Smells like mildew now.
Yeah. That's my... I live with a guy who, I guess he's learned this over the years, but you know how you should iron your shirts after they come out of the dryer?
Yeah.
Or you can get them fresh out, and if you hang up right away, there's still enough residual heat, right?
Yeah, then the wrinkles will go.
So if he misses his chance, he'll go back into the washer and do it again.
Oh, that's bad.
That's not good.
There's another trick, though. If you hang them up while you're in the shower.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the other one I've tried to.
But let's go ahead and take a look at some of the code. Now, this is all incredibly preliminary. This is not the code for the finished project. Mm-hmm. It's just a project that I've been working on, and I kind of applied what we're trying to do here.
Okay.
So, Alex, if you go to my computer, there's a couple of things we've done. First, we're including wire, which is the I2C device. Liquid Crystal I2C, that's the library that allows it to address the screen. I probably don't need to include files. That's weird. Again, this is what happens when you mash together code. This is the line that allows me to access the real-time clock. All of this is totally normal. We've done this before. This is from the previous Arduino projects that we've done with RTC.
Right.
This right here, this analog sensor pin and digital sensor pin, those are the ways that I can talk to the digital sensor, to the light sensor. And again, it does two different outputs. One is a digital output, and one is an analog output. You could use the analog output if you wanted multiple levels, like how much light are you using.
Yeah.
In this case, I don't care about that. I just want to know, is it on or is it off?
Okay.
So I'm using the digital. Bunch of stuff here. All this, you may remember this from when we were playing with our clock, when we made the clock in Arduino 102. These are the variables that I use so that it doesn't rewrite the screen unless the number has changed, and that just keeps the flicker down.
Right.
These are new. The little log that I created.
Oh,
that's it.
Yeah.
So what it will do is it stores three sets, seconds and minutes. So second one, second two, second three, minute one, minute two, minute three. That's where it keeps the previous wait times.
Right. Yeah. And hours would be... That would be scary if it was taking that long.
I could put that... It's the same code. I could put that in there. Yeah, but if you're waiting hours, you're in the wrong nursing facility.
Definitely.
That's bad. All right. So the setup is I tell it which pin am I connected to. Mm-hmm. Then I activate the LCD and turn on the backlight. This allows me to output to my serial in case I want to debug, or if you wanted to get the data from into your computer. This works. This is how you would do it.
I see.
Right? All right. The rest of this is mostly all the code that we've seen before for a real-time clock. You need this in order to be able to access it, to read, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. It doesn't get interesting again until we get to here. So this is the timer function. If we look at the loop first, all the loop does is a light check. That's what we want. We want minimal code in our main loop. It's going to run the light check. And what light check does is it just says, hey, is there anything on the pin connected to the light intensity sensor?
And if not, don't do anything. And if so...
Right. If nothing is there, then... See, because that's what the if statement is. If that switch state is low. Mm-hmm. So in other words, if there is light, then do this. If not, here's the end of the if, do nothing. Mm-hmm. So if there is no light, all this Arduino is going to do is keep calling light check, light check, light check, light check, light check.
Right.
It won't do anything until light check says, oh, hey, yeah, the state changed.
Right. The light is on now.
The light is now on. So if the state changes, which is what this is, the first thing it's going to do is it's going to set the timer to zero. Remember this? This is how we set time on a clock, right?
Mm-hmm.
In this particular case, I'm not using it as a clock. I'm using it as a timer. So every time I want to start, I just say 0 seconds, 0 minutes, 0 hours, 0 days, 0 day of week, 0 years. So I'm essentially, I'm not using the clock as it was intended. I'm using it as a timer instead of as a clock.
Right. But you're setting the baseline.
Right.
They're setting the bottom.
Bottom. It's zero. Now, while switch state is equal low, so while the light continues to be on, it will only do what's between these two brackets. So the first one says, hey, if the switch is on, if the light is on, set the timer to zero, set the RTC to zero, then jump into this while statement. As long as the light stays on, all it will do is it will first check to see if the light is still on, because you have to do that, otherwise you get stuck there. Otherwise, the state never changes, right?
Right, right.
And then it runs timer. And here's what the timer does. Timer will read the time from the RTC. And remember, I set it to zero.
Mm-hmm.
Then, just like we did with the clock, it's just going to print it. So this is actually the same code from our LCD clock in Arduino 102. It's going to print it, and because I'm starting at zero, it looks like a timer. It's going to start from zero every single time.
Right, which makes sense.
Right. And it will continue to do that. So it will stay in timer until there's no light.
No light
turns on. When there's no light, what's going to happen is it's going to pass by this this while statement, and now it first clears the LCD, so it gets everything off of there. Then it's going to call the time. It's going to, in other words, where did you leave the function?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to store that inside of here, second. But first, before I do that, the third value is filled up with the second value. The second value is filled up with the first value. And then the first value is filled up with the new value. And that's my log.
I see. Okay.
Right. And then this part, all this does is it prints the log on the screen.
Right. And then for the following timer that gets set, because you're having it go previous time.
Right.
Okay. So it falls. It's like a.
But yeah, it cascades.
Yeah.
So this will only be called if the light is on at some point.
Right.
Because this exists inside of this if statement. So it's only if the light goes on, am I going to shuffle my values.
Right.
So if you go back to the side view here, Alex, you can see how this works. So immediately it starts timing, take away the light, it changes the value down. So timing.
And then pass the value on.
Timing.
Yeah.
Let's go up to 4 seconds.
Ooh, change it up.
Risque. There you go. Now, if you had response time like this, then you're in a great nursing home.
And also, so you were saying that you can set the tolerance for the amount of light that it sets it off with the little screw there?
Precisely. So if you take a look at this little potentiometer, this allows me to set off when it's
so
enough light. So right now,
the
studio lighting is enough to set off the timer, and I'd have to actually cover it to make it stop.
Ah, yeah.
Oh, Alex is getting tricky there.
Alex dimmed
it. I can bring it down, Alex. Oh, come on. What you got? Oh, that's what you got.
No light.
You know what? Actually, no. Bring it down. Let's see. Let's see if I can.
What's the ambient? Oh, the camera is now struggling.
Oh, but it's working. The timer is actually on. Oh,
camera. Hello.
The camera doesn't like low.
Hello,
low light.
Camera.
There we go. Okay, this is never turning off now because basically I said total black is still on,
even when you cover it.
Yep. That's not so.
That is completely useless.
That's kind of useless.
Yeah, that's cool though that you can dial it in that way.
So and what I need to do is I need to make this potentiometer accessible because he needs to be able to dial it in himself.
Right.
So,
good point.
Yeah, exactly. So once he gets it installed, And again, I wanted a 3D frame that will firmly install it right against that light.
Yeah.
He needs to be able to access that potentiometer so that he can adjust it so it only comes on when the light is on.
You could even, I guess, incorporate like a little dial, you know, like where there's a 3D printed enclosure and then you have one of those potentiometer dials. So like kind of...
I can make this steampunk.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
I could put gears.
Yeah.
And LED lights.
Now you're getting artistic with the idea.
Yeah. But yeah, this is something that unfortunately I'm not going to be able to build this for him until I get back from internship. So that's in August.
Okay.
But Mark... you've seen it. I have built this thing, and as soon as it is done, I will send it to you, and everyone else will get the code because someone else in that thread was like, "Hey, if you're going to build this, can the rest of us see it? Because this is kind of cool." And then, yes, it is, because anything that has a light, that you want to activate something else, this is how you would do it.
Interesting.
Yeah. So you don't have to do what I did. The first version of the washer dryer thing.
Yeah.
I actually opened up the control panel and wired in to the LED.
Yeah.
I mean, that works, but it's better if you don't have to touch that, because if you burn out those electronics, there's going to be a lot of really upset people with you.
Yeah, definitely. And as I was mentioning earlier, I was talking about like where my dad would be upset if we left the front door open. You know, the age old
right.
Like, are you trying to heat the neighborhood?
Yes, I am, Dad.
and keep track of how long we left the front door open. But Alex made a good point that he'd probably want to keep track of how long I was playing video games instead.
If
there was a way, yeah, he wouldn't want to know that.
If you want to know that, Brian.
Put the light sensor on like the front of the Xbox or something so you know how long you've been playing on the Xbox.
So he knows when to pick up the phone and disrupt the dial-up between us playing Doom.
That's how
Mom,
that's
I'm
how
on
old
the
school.
Internet!
Mom!
See, there's a whole generation that doesn't understand what that is, but you do.
No,
you
we do. We're the kind of the last, the last of that generation.
Folks. I had a Practical Peripherals 14.4. That was the fastest thing ever.
Uh-huh. I had a dial-up modem. I don't remember how fast it was, though. It was sad.
So we had external, because we still had like serial and parallel ports on our computer. So I had a nice little, it was a white Practical Peripherals box.
Yeah.
That thing was, when I bought it, that was like $600. And this was like a $1,990. So that was a lot of money.
Didn't you have one, though, too? It was like a phone that you
acoustic
like...
coupler, yeah. 300 baud. Don't be...
Whoa.
Hey, the thing about that, you could use it on payphones.
Oh, okay. That is, yeah.
So I used to be able to put the payphone on it, and then I would generate the 2600 hertz tone that would tell it was a service call, and then I could call anywhere I wanted. You don't have to touch the buttons. You just get your computer to send the tones through the phone.
And that's how the first time you talked to the Pope was using
actually,
that.
Actually, this was allegedly. This was all allegedly.
Yeah. Allegedly.
All right, folks. When we come back, we've got a special treat for you. We're going to be taking a look at that fantastic Synology NAS, the network attached storage box with the 10 gig Ethernet interface.
Fast.
You already know that I love Synology. I love the fact that it's durable. I love the fact that it's dependable, it's consistent, it's powerful, and it's got so much flexibility. You can run so many apps on it. You can just load the thing up to do pretty much everything you want it to do. But what happens when a geek gets access to really, really crazy fast transfers? We're going to show you in just a bit. But first, let's take a moment for these messages. Now, folks, we know that you love your gadgets. I mean, you wouldn't be fans of the Twit TV network if you didn't. But what happens when you lose those gadgets? What happens when you lose your prized possessions? What happens when you do something as silly as walking away from it at a coffee shop or at the park? Well, folks, if it was the old world, then you'd just have to kiss that investment goodbye. You'd have to say goodbye to your treasure technology, but we don't have to do that anymore because we've got the Tracker. The Tracker is a coin-sized device that you can attach to anything that you might lose, which will give you its position down to the meter pretty much anytime you want. Now, 8 years ago, Tracker changed everything when they released their first tracking device, and now they've done it again with the all-new Tracker Pixel. With the Tracker Pixel, you never need to worry about losing your things again. It's the lightest Bluetooth tracking device on the market. You place Tracker Pixel on whatever you tend to lose. Again, your keys, your wallets, even your cat. And it's small enough to fit on your smallest items. Now, when you misplace that item, not if, but when you misplace it, and it has a Tracker Pixel attached, you can use your smartphone and a 90 decibel alert will help you find it in seconds. It even has a powerful LED light so you can find your items in the dark. Now, if you lose your phone, it also works in reverse. You can press the button on your Tracker Pixel
and your phone rings even if it's on silent. You can even locate your items if it's miles away because tracker users are part of the largest crowd locate network in the world. That means as long as you're near another tracker user, you can still get a notification on your phone about where your device is located. And Tracker's 30-day money-back guarantee means that you truly have nothing to lose. If you're like me, if you check the obvious places every time you lose your device, the couch, the kitchen pockets, then weird places like the bathroom, the fridge, the hamper, then you start getting creative and looking in things like the peanut butter jar, then you're going to want the Tracker because it will keep you from having all that anxiety. Tracker keeps your most treasured tech where it should be, with you. Just go to thetracker.com and enter the promo code KNOWHOW to save 20% off any order. That's the Tracker, thetracker.com, promo code KNOWHOW for 20% off. And we thank the Tracker for their support of KNOWHOW.
Okay, so Brian.
Yes?
A while back, I showed a new box that had arrived at my lab. It was an unboxing. Didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
Wasn't really expecting anything, but it was Synology sending me one of their newest NASes, their most highly performing NASes, but with a twist, a 10 gig Ethernet card.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen you quite as giddy. It seemed like opening a present on Christmas.
There was some giddiness. I mean, because I've got a 10 gig network at home, but I don't have 10 gig devices.
Right.
And of all the devices in my network, the one that could use it the most
is your NAS.
It's the NAS, because that's where all the files are. That's where I'm going to be having the heavy transfers. I mean, yeah, a 10 gig router, that's probably not going to do you so much good. No. A 10 gig camera, well, I hope it's not using 10 gig. But the central point of storage for all the devices on my network, yeah, I think that's worth it.
Yeah, and it's a nice looking box. And then also, I think the part that I've always been impressed with since moving on to the Synology router was the software package.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That has really changed. Because I used to be a QNAP guy. I was big into QNAP. I was also big into ReadyNAS. Those are solid products. I mean, they do things very, very well. They're well built. But the thing about Synology, it's that ecosystem of plugins. The plugins are fantastic. Everything from Plex to, you know, things like a DNS or VPN servers. Yeah. You can really get in there. And, I mean, my network wouldn't work without the 15, 13 that I have in my network, because that runs containers. So when I run a browser, it's running in a container off that NAS.
And you're going to need speed for that.
It's got to go fast, Brian.
So now that you've had time to play with it, what did you think?
Well, I could talk about it, or I could just show you. Synology has impressed me year after year with network-attached storage boxes that define the SMB industry with an almost impossible combination of speed, reliability, richness of features, and affordability. They even managed to bring their NAS expertise to the incredibly crowded router market and instantly became one of the top providers of premium home networking equipment. So, when we received the Synology DS1517 Plus, expectations were high. This $700 and up box looks a lot like the exceptional 1515 Plus it replaces, but the question was, would it deliver more? The answer, yes, but also, it depends. They both have 5 drive bays. They both have 4 gigabit Ethernet ports with link aggregation that allows them to be bonded, assuming you have a capable switch for higher bandwidth. They both have 4 USB 3.0 ports and 2 eSATA ports that can be used either for single drive expansion or for connecting up to 10 drives into expansion chassis. They both are powered by quad-core 64-bit Intel Atom C2538 processors running at 2.4 GHz, and they both run the same DSM operating system. After a peek inside, however, it becomes clear that the 1517 Plus is the evolved form of the 1515 Plus. Both have upgradable memory, but while the 1515 Plus tops out at 6 GB, the 1517 Plus can be expanded to 16 GB of dual-channel memory. Both units have the ability to use an SSD as a cache to speed transfers, but while the 1515 Plus needs to use up one of its drive bays to take advantage of that feature, the 1517 Plus can use a dual M.2 SSD adapter to give you even more performance than a SATA SSD, while allowing you to continue using your 5th drive bay for more storage. Most importantly, for network geeks like myself who are chomping at the bit for just a little extra something, the DS1517 Plus has an open Gen 2x8 PCIe slot that can be populated with a 10 gig Ethernet adapter.
In the case of our review unit, Synology has equipped the box with a dual SFP Plus card, perfect for top-of-rack operation. But if you want to use one of the less expensive 10GB RJ45 options, the 1517 Plus also supports third-party cards that can sell for under $200. I use an SFP Plus cable and an SFP Plus desktop card to link up, mirroring what will probably be the norm for at least a while in the SMB space. 10GB switches still tend to be a bit too expensive. Okay, so how fast is fast? Well, you're not going to get 10 gigabit per second speed, but the results were still very impressive. With my default setup with 3 drives, I clocked a read performance of 450 megabytes per second read and a write speed of 310 megabytes per second write. That's 3600 megabits per second read and 2480 megabits per second write versus the 800 megabits per second read and 500 megabits per second write that I expect from 1 gig Ethernet. However, using an all SSD setup and maxing out the memory brought performance to a stratospheric 1,112 megabytes per second read and 462 megabytes per second write, or almost 9,000 megabits per second read and 3,700 megabits per second write. In other words, damn. Now, I know that some of our audience need the alphabet spec soup, so here we go. The DS1517 Plus supports 2.5-inch hard drives and SSDs, as well as 3.5-inch drives up to 10 terabytes for a max of 50 terabytes in chassis storage. Everything is powered by an internal 200-watt power supply. It has 4 RJ45 gigabit Ethernet ports, 4 USB 3.0 ports, 3 in the back, 1 in the front, and 2 eSATA ports. It can be configured for link aggregation or port failover. It can read FAT, XFAT, HFS, NTFS, EXT3 and 4, and BTRFS file systems, configured into JBOD RAID 0 through 10, as well as Synology's hybrid RAID. It can act as an iSCSI target for up to 32 devices and supports 256 iSCSI LUNs. Maximum volume size using the expansion chassis is 108 terabytes. It measures 166 millimeters by 250 millimeters by 243 millimeters and weighs about 4.5 kilos. Now that may cover raw hardware, but let's get into the software. Our review 1517 Plus is running DSM 6.1. As much as I like the hardware, it's Synology's operating system that really makes their NAS special because it's so flexible. Want to run your network storage services entirely off the 1517 Plus? You can do that with support for up to 2,048 local users, 256 local groups, and 512 shared folders. Or you can integrate it with your 802.x ACL NFS authentication. Want to segment your network? You can individually assign each of the 4 Ethernet ports or use VLANs. Want to secure your network? Run your own email server with up to 90 clients and 20 VPN connections. That's the beauty of Synology's approach. Use it the way you want, with just the features you need. Speaking of need, I need to talk about the Synology plugin ecosystem because that is special in its field. DSM has the ability to expand the feature set with plugins that can run entirely in the OS, as well as using specialized hardware in the DS1517 Plus. Want a security camera network? Grab a few IP cameras and install Surveillance Station. You get 2 licenses out of the box and can constantly monitor, record, and notify for 10 cameras at about $50 per additional camera. Are you a cord cutter who wants to create an over-the-air network DVR? Get an inexpensive USB digital receiver and install any of a number of plugins to automatically record and stream your favorite OTA programming. Have a dead spot in your Wi-Fi coverage? Plug in a USB Wi-Fi adapter and turn your NAS into a hotspot, or why not get a 4G USB dongle to provide failover internet connectivity to your network? Want to run your own cloud office suite? Well, that's completely free, and combined with the VPN capabilities, you now have the option of having Google Docs or Office 365-like cloud convenience with the peace of mind of knowing that your data stays on your network. Or perhaps you're a media junkie and you want all your movies, music, and photos to be available to you at all times for free. Again, grab a plugin that uses the hardware transcoding capability of Synology NASes, and you're good to go. From security apps to containers, DNS servers to media organizers, there's probably more than a few Synology plugins that will be exactly what you were looking for. And that's true if you're a networking newbie who just wants a way to see your photos on your phone, or a grizzled IT guy who is over everything. In short, the price is right. The performance is exceptional, and the feature set is flexible. In fact, the only reason why the purchase of a 1517 Plus is a depends is if you already have a 1515.
And we are back. Okay, so this is quite possibly the best NAS I currently have. Actually, not quite possibly. It is the best NAS I currently have in circulation. It is so flexible. It is so fast. And pretty much it does everything I want out of a NAS. I can probably retire two or three of the arrays and just replace it.
Just use this? That's how highly you regard this,
Yeah, this is really good.
It's a nice-looking machine, too, I mean, and it's got everything you would need.
This is what happens when you keep iterating on a product rather than trying to make a brand-new product category. Mm-hmm. I mean, Synology, they already amazed me when they came out with a router that was actually really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it wasn't a commodity. It was actually something that built on their experience with NAS boxes. This box, it's, you know, I would run this in an enterprise.
Nice.
With a 10 gig interface, this would absolutely be suitable to run things like VMs straight off the array.
Right.
And it's at a price that, you know, it's not out of the reach of the
ordinary
human. Yeah,
what is the price
human.
On it?
Yeah, you know, it depends. Okay, so it's with drives or without drives. You're going to be looking between $1,000 and $2,000. Okay. Depending on how you want to equip this thing. And that's, again, that's not bad. No,
for the kind of hardware that you get with it, that's not bad. But I think for me, or maybe even your average NAS user, it's not just that they threw a bunch of hardware into the box. It's that it's also paired with the interface and the software that I'm now more familiar with using the router, but they blend over. And when it makes it easy to do stuff with the hardware, that makes all the difference.
Yeah, exactly. And I got to say, the support that I've gotten from Synology has been, bar none, the best in the industry. Even better than QNAP, and QNAP is pretty good. And what I've done in the past is I will not register this under my name, so they don't know it's me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll call with typical issues that a NAS user might have, and they can answer it every single time.
Very cool.
I got to tell you, it's, if they could bring this down to like the price of the 1500s, this would be the no-brainer.
So if you were running older NASs, is this one worth to upgrade then?
It really depends, because an older NAS, even though, you know, let's say Synology, an older Synology NAS, probably has a lot of the capabilities of this. Unless you really need 10 gig speeds, you probably can't justify it with that interface card.
I see.
If you take away that interface card, it dramatically drops the price of the array.
Okay.
But, I mean, if you have an older array, or if you got like one of those no-namers that just kind of chugs along, yes, step up to this. You will be so happy. Even if you don't get the 1700 series, get something like the 200 series, the dual drive bay ones that will run you $300 that give you the apps, the plugins that you get out of the Synology system. And yeah, that's going to be for you.
Very cool. I like it. So when do I get to play with it? Oh, harsh. Harsh. The silence says it all.
No, totally.
It's okay. You don't need to share. I know how much you like it.
I do.
But if you end up getting rid of your old ones, you know.
Maybe, I don't know. Well, folks, we're not going to answer that question right now. Instead, we're going to be moving over to more of your questions, our answers. But before we get there, let's take a moment for these messages. Who's your daddy? You're my daddy.
Ben Horn's your daddy. Did you do any hot swapping? I guess you haven't really played with it too much, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, there's a Tim's hair on it. That's definitely.
Well, the last time we had Terps in the studio.
That makes sense.
Terps.
It's like he's here with us right now.
Oh, except he doesn't stink.
Oh, he's so stinky right now. Otherwise, I would have brought him in with me.
All right, let's go back. And in three. And we are back. Now, during the break, we actually did have someone in the chat room who was kind of shocked by the price point. $1,000 to $2,000 is equipped with the full drives, like, you know, like 10 terabytes. Actually, it would be 15 terabytes of drives.
Right.
And the 10 gig card. You don't have to get that. The base
those
model,
are options. Yeah,
yeah. The super simple empty chassis is something like $700.
Okay, because yeah, the other number, would you say it was 1,500, 2,000?
Yeah, yeah, 1,000 to 2,000. It depends on how you want to configure it.
I was like, right. That's like twice as much as what my PC cost me to build.
Yeah, but you got to remember, I mean, this is kind of stacked out.
Oh, totally.
Because you can increase the amount of memory, you can change the drives, yeah. You can, and that 10 gig interface card, I mean, that's not super cheap.
No. But if you do make that investment, it's probably going to last you for a long time. Like, how long do you typically hold on to an S for?
I follow enterprise packages, enterprise practices. So I will only hang on to a product until end of life. So when they retire a product, it gets retired from my physical plant.
Okay, and that can vary depending on the company. Yeah. And the
it's just I cannot have my data on a network switch or a NAS that is no longer supported. Because if it goes down, I need to be able to call someone to fix it.
Good point.
Yeah.
Because I feel like if I had something like this, I would probably hang on to it for a long time because I don't think 10 gigabits is going to last me a while.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've got a Synology NAS that's been in my network for 7 years now.
That's pretty good.
It's still chugging away all the original parts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right, let's go ahead and move on to some more questions. We've got one here from Peter Hans, who saw a little something, I think probably on my appearance on the new screensavers, and he wants it for his summer travels.
So Peter asks this, I know on your recent travels you had mentioned a new mobile hotspot you were trying. I have an upcoming trip and I want to look into the one that you used. Looked through the recent know-how show notes and did not see it mentioned.
Yeah, Peter, there's a good reason for that because it was never on know-how. It was on the new screensavers. It was the one I did with Aaron Newcomb.
Okay.
And this is it. So this is, it's just a hotspot. We've all seen hotspots. But the difference is this is one of those SIM-less hotspots. It's sort of like an eSIM.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually pop off this cover and put in standard size SIMs. However, the real advantage of this is not the device. It's the service. It's called GlocalMe. And what they've done.
Say that again?
Glocal. GlocalMe.
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 So local, global,
me.
GlocalMe.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a thing. It's a branding thing.
GlocalMe.
Silly name, but actually a really good device.
Okay.
So you can use this international. All you have to do is fill up the device. So you recharge the device, and then it will work in, well, it worked in all the countries I visited. So I was in Rome, the Netherlands, Malta. I was in Beijing.
Okay.
I went to the Philippines. And in all places, this was able to connect
nice.
In just a couple of seconds.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, let me go ahead and show you what the interface looks like. Alex, if you go to my computer, this is the GlocalMe interface. This, they need to work on this. It's a good device, but seriously, this website, it's not intuitive.
Why is your icon a small child?
Because it's who I am inside.
You're a little white child, a little white girl?
Kind of creepy, actually.
Okay. Yeah, you have the same dead eyes.
So. Oh. But here's the thing. So when I got this device, I charged it up with 50 euro worth of credit.
Mm-hmm.
And I use this extensively. This was my primary communications link because I did not buy a local SIM like I normally do. Normally, when I go into a country, I buy a SIM, mm-hmm. and that's what I use. But the problem is I hop to four different countries. And I didn't want to have to buy four different SIMs.
Yeah.
That would have been 80 euro, 20 bucks minimum.
Pain in the butt, yeah.
Right. So I got one. I paid 50 euro. And actually, Alex, if you go back to that, you'll notice I have 2846 left. So I really didn't use much. And if you look at the traffic history, it's, let's see, it's when did I start using this thing? Come on.
Yeah, maybe the software does.
Their website is not super.
But it
awesome.
Worked, so.
But yeah, see, so it tracks all the different places where it accessed. Let's see if I can go
you
back
see
to
how
Rome
much data
or Malta.
You used.
So that's all in the Netherlands. There's Malta,
my homeland.
See if I can get Rome's around here somewhere. But yeah, it just it roams from country to country to country.
Okay, so you bought just one SIM. In what country was that?
No SIM.
No
I
SIM.
Didn't have to buy a SIM.
You didn't buy a SIM.
So
this
was the other cool part. This was ready to go when I was in the States. I didn't have to buy anything locally. So when I landed in Rome, I turned this on. It figured out where it was. It adjusted itself. It went to my account and said, okay, yeah, you're active.
Oh, that is cool.
So
that is much less of a pain in the butt than trying to buy a SIM in each country.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Literally 45 seconds after touching down, I turned this thing on, and now my phone and my computer had Wi-Fi access to the internet.
Oh, that's
and it
smart.
Was enough to make a voice call. I was like, oh, I didn't expect that.
Very cool. And yeah, so when you connect to it with your phone, do you get a reading of like how strong the signal is, or can you?
No, so there's little lights here, so it'll tell you right here
how well you're connected to
the
network.
They probably could use a better hotspot, because it's not really about the hotspot. It's about the service. The service has the contract with all the different carriers and say, hey, we're going to essentially we're buying up your excess capacity and we're going to serve it out to our customers.
Oh, God, because you remember when we went to IFA last year? That was my first experience going to another country and having to use my phone on different networks. Mm-hmm. And so through Verizon, I would get it was terrible.
It was crazy expensive.
It was like 200 megabytes. And if I went over that, it started charging me.
Didn't you have to pay like $100 for the 200 megabytes?
It was,
it was something not
good. It was something ridiculous. And then every time you get to a new country, into a new service, which in Europe, you know, you go from, I think it was in Germany, and then I went to the Netherlands, and then I went back to Luxembourg, and each country has its own, like, network, and so I was, like, resetting my megabytes and getting charged. It was bad.
Yeah, it's always a bad scene. One thing I will tell you, if you're going to do this, remember, if you're using a Windows 10 machine, you have to go into the settings and tell it that this is a metered connection. Otherwise, your Windows 10 machine will try to pull its updates down over your GlocalMe.
Oh, bad. And then you're like, I'm all out of credits.
I know. Well, how did that happen?
But I guess if you did need to add more euros to your plan, it's pretty simple.
Super easy. So if you, I mean, again, this is not the best thing. But like, if I wanted, where's the recharge? So if I wanted to recharge, it goes here. And then I've got different ways to choose how much I want to add.
Very cool.
Yeah.
58 countries.
That I did not do that one.
No. That's a little pricey.
That was, no.
But it's
no
cool thanks. It has that option.
And, you know, I still will buy SIMs. If I'm, like, when I go to Rome, I buy a SIM. Which, by the way, do not buy the SIM in the airport.
Don't do it at the airport.
Because they
taught me that.
Overcharge you. It is ridiculous. Yeah. But, like, Germany. Germany is the best one. You can literally walk off the plane, and within 40 steps, you'll be at a kiosk where you can buy a SIM for $20. And it gives you like 2 gigabytes of data.
Yeah, which is so much better than what Verizon was doing for me.
But the issue with that is it's going to work in Germany.
Yes.
So if you're like me and you have to hop, that ends up costing more than doing this. And it also means that this is already in my pocket. When I'm boarding the plane, I know I'm going to be able to connect when I touch down. That's kind of a good feeling.
Okay, so what's battery life like? Did you ever have to charge it? Or
have
connection issues?
On the internal battery, I was able to get, they say, up to 16 hours. I did not get 16 hours. Mm. I got maybe 12.
Okay.
12 hours. And I think that was in an area with good connectivity. I'm sure it will drop sharply if otherwise, you're in an area where it has to transmit at high power.
Right.
But, I mean, I have USB batteries, so I just...
So not too bad.
Yeah. That's not a problem.
Okay. I mean, you ever have any issues connecting to networks or?
Well, yeah, because it's still wireless. So if you're in an area that's not getting wireless connectivity, no hotspot's ever going to work.
Not going to make a difference.
But where I was, it did really well. In fact, there was never a time when I was in Malta or Rome where it did not have connectivity.
Cool.
There was one time when I was in Amsterdam when it started to kind of fritz out.
Yeah. Okay, that's to be expected, I guess.
Go figure. All right, let's go ahead and move on. We're going from Glocal Me to Local My Raspi. I couldn't make that transition.
Hmm.
Yeah. What do we got? Right.
So this question comes from Robert. I'm going to say Robert because
like
he doesn't
that.
Have a T on
that's
it.
That's fancy.
And he asks, what kind / brand of mSATA card would work best for a Raspberry Pi and keep the build in the extra Linux computer for my bench price range?
Okay, go ahead and click that, Alex. I saw this at Maker Faire the other month, and essentially all it is it's an enclosure that you put a Raspberry into, and then it gives you the ability to add an mSATA drive.
Okay. Yeah. So it's like, it has an expansion slot in
it? It has an expansion slot. So you could do something like, Alex, go to that link I got, the Samsung 850 Evo. This is a nice, fast device. It's not that expensive. 256 gigabytes for about $100. that's
three times the price of the Raspberry Pi.
Three times the price of the Raspberry Pi. Here's the issue, though. That enclosure does have an mSATA interface.
Yeah.
But all it is a USB interface back to the Pi, and it's USB 2, so it is grossly faster than anything the Raspberry Pi would ever be able to transfer.
That seems so silly.
It's a little silly.
And I guess, is that trying to future? If they're
no, I mean, because it's a USB 2 interface. It's
it's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
Bad.
I mean, what I would do is don't go with the mSATA, because the mSATA, you're paying extra for the size.
Yeah.
Go with a full-size 2.5-inch SSD, because for the same price as a 256-gigabyte SSD, you can get a 512-gigabyte, like a Kingston Economy unit.
Mm-hmm.
It's still going to be way faster than anything that the Raspberry Pi can ever transfer over to USB 2 interface.
Yeah.
But you we'll have it cheaper and bigger, and it actually includes the enclosure. So that right. if you buy the Kingston kit,
you get the enclosure. Yeah.
The enclosure, yeah. So
okay. that's what yeah, that little case looks nice though. If you want
nice
to
case.
Turn your Pi into a full fledged desktop.
Well, I mean, they were really pushing it at Maker Faire, and I was like, yeah, it looks nice, but. It's not anything we haven't seen before.
How much was the case? I didn't see.
What, $60?
$60. Like
yeah, it's cute.
It's cute. Okay. All right.
Yeah, that's not bad. Not bad at all. All right, let's do one more before we close it out. We got someone who has a question about surveillance.
All right, this one comes from Francis, and he asks, to all the users of Synology Surveillance Station, just wondering if any of you guys bought an additional device licenses. I have a DS216 Play and already am using two cameras, but I'm tempted to add maybe one or two. Curious if I'm the only Kita that's considering it.
You are not. All Synology NASs can do up to 10 devices, 10 network devices. You have to pay for the licenses. You get the first two for free, and then they can run about $50 per or down. I bought a 10-pack for something like $375.
And those are lifetime? Then?
Those are
you
lifetime.
You don't have to like, renew
right.
the license?
But it's okay. You get a number for each one, and every number you type in, that activates another slot.
I see.
The thing is, though, he's using the 216 Play, which is it's a lower power unit. Mm-hmm. I could probably get away with using four cameras on a 216 Play. I probably would not go above that because you'll start dropping frames.
I see. It's too much stress for
this
it.
This is too much stress for it. That's a lot of processing power. That's a lot of transfer.
Okay.
But, yeah, four devices, no problem. Absolutely. Oh.
Cool.
Yes, it is a fantastic solution. You should consider it.
All right. Well, I guess we answered that then.
Yeah. How about that?
Cool.
Well, Brian, this has been a fun episode. We've had a little bit of a review. We've had fun building something for someone who might need it.
Right.
And, we've had a chance to take a look at things like the GlocalMe.
Yeah, I like these feedback episodes because not only does it give us a chance to interact with people, who we're doing this show for, but it gives us a variety of things to talk about. Like, we got to build something today, we got to review something today, and then we answered a couple questions.
I got to show off a NAS that no way in the world I'm going to let Brian play with.
Thanks.
Yeah. Now, folks, if you want to find out more about anything that we've covered, the notes, the links for the episode, you got to go to our show page, which, Brian, where do they find that?
You can find that over at twit.tv/KH. And not only will you find the show notes with links to all the stuff that we talked about today, like if you want to buy that NAS for me, if you want to download or subscribe to the show, you can do that there.
Yeah, and also don't forget that you can find us on the social, specifically on Google Plus. Just go to Google Plus and find Know How. Ask to join because we have to keep out the spam accounts. And we still get people who do spam, which is amazing because their spam gets caught up in the filter and then I ban them. So it must be an automated process.
Yeah, it has
to be. If you're not a spammer and you're not a bot, go ahead and jump in. You get access to over 11,000 Kitas. Those are our know-it-alls, people who maybe have potential projects for you, maybe people who need your help. Maybe you just like seeing what other people build. Give us pictures and videos of your builds and your questions, and maybe you'll end up on an episode of Know How.
That's right. But if you want to see what we're doing outside of Know How or what kind of projects we might have coming up, the best place to do that is on Twitter, and I am at @cranky_hippo.
And you can find me at @PadreSJ. And we've got a third member of our crew.
Do we?
Yes, we do. He's a good man.
We do.
Andrew. You can find Andrew here every episode.
He lives in the abyss.
He lives in the darkness that is that corner. And Andrew, you can find him at twitter.com/ANELF3. Andrew
Padre.
Nelf.
Excuse me, Padre. It's pronounced Alex.
Alex.
That's not, no. That's not in the Ziploc or the cupboard of knowledge.
I think you've got a hole in your Ziploc bag. Things are falling out.
Anyways, folks, until next time, I am Father Robert Ballasaire.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
And now that you know how,
keep asking us questions. Because we might answer them. If we know the answers. If we don't know the answer, we're not going to answer it.
No, we'll still answer it.
Yeah, we probably would.